Sometimes life feels out of our control. We get stuck in trauma, old patterns, and change feels out of reach. Sometimes it feels like fate. We want to help you break out of old, unhelpful patterns and become healthier. We're Fate Resilience, taking control of the outcome.
With licensed therapists, Jennifer Oxford,
Taylor Madsen,
Haley Mayer.
Well, guys, we're going to talk about trauma. And before you have a response to that, stay with us. We're going to explain it a little bit more.
Have your response and hang out with us.
Yeah, just listen up. So I guess the first question, though, is because let me just be very frank. A lot of social media people like to define trauma in different ways. And unfortunately, there's a lot of misinformation out there. So what is trauma? What would we say is the defining definition that we want to put as the trauma,
Taylor? An intense emotional experience.
I love that it's that broad, but I also know it can be really hard for people that it's that broad, right? Mm-hmm. Because different experiences like can be intense for one person and not intense for another person, right? So it's about your individual response. And there are four kind of ways that you could experience something intensely, right? So there's the direct experience of the event.
So like you're the one who it happened to kind of thing.
You're the one who it happened to. Mm-hmm. The witnessing of the event in person as it occurred to someone else.
So like
I saw it happen to somebody.
So like I'm walking down the street and I saw that person getting hit by a bike kind of thing.
Well, so I'm actually going to use a recent example. So my husband recently had an accident in our home where he fell through the ceiling and was injured. So for him, falling through the ceiling was a direct experience of the fall.
Mm-hmm.
For me, witnessing him falling and witnessing him experience that was a different type of experience than his. The third actually happened to other people, and I'll explain this. So the third is we learn about the event occurred to a family member or a friend, which means that when we told family members or friends, they had an experience, they had an intense emotional response to what happened. And depending on their history, that affected them differently. We actually had a family member who had previously hurt their back. And so they were they had a more intense response to learning that Matt had hurt his back. And those kinds of things. And then the fourth is the experience of repeated or extreme exposure to an adverse details of the event. And I would say, while this doesn't tie into my most recent experience, that as a therapist, sometimes by hearing something over and over again, that can cause what I refer to as secondary trauma from that hearing those event details.
Mm-hmm. I just a plug-in for therapists. I think one of the reasons why a lot of people will say like, well, all you do is sit and listen, and all you do is this. And I think, especially while we're talking about trauma, it's not to say like, you should see how much we have trauma, right? Like, but I think honestly, I think there's a reason why we have training to do what we do. There's a reason why we have to go through a lot of different things. I was listening to another podcast. It's because we're directly putting ourselves through trauma experiences like that last one that you mentioned of like the repeated exposure to those details of different things. And it takes training to know how to process it, not only with that person, but for ourselves as well. But I think one of the big things with it is that if you don't know how to handle the trauma of the scenario, what we're saying too throughout the scenario, whether it be it directly experience it, witnessing others, learning it happened to someone, that's okay. We're not saying like all trauma is unable to be worked through. The reason we're understanding it is so we can work through it. Right.
And I think it's really important too, as we say there are four types, that in none of those are we comparing the trauma, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like it's not a matter of saying, well, it absolutely was worse in this situation than this experience. That may be the case, but when we start comparing trauma, we actually don't do anyone a service. We don't do the person experiencing the trauma a different way of service, and we don't do ourselves a service. So I really just encourage you that even though there are different ways to experience trauma, don't try and do a hierarchy just realize it's about the extent of emotional response it creates in you, not about how you experienced it a lot.
Someone that drowns in a pool and someone that drowns at the bottom of the ocean, both are just as drowned.
Yeah, that's you just say they're drowned. You don't say like, it's like, there was like this joke about like female animals attacking people and how like, it's stupid. We say like a girl runs faster than a boy, but we're not doing that to like, it was a girl shark who attacked you. So it's not as big of a deal, right? Like it's trauma all around. Yeah, it's trauma all around. We don't have to classify it.
Well, and especially I think for those people who do either hear about it or witness it or have that repeated exposure, I think that they do sometimes minimize their experience, even though they're, and we're going to talk about how their response is not necessarily minimized. So this is not a, and we'll go into it, it's not a rational thing necessarily, but I don't want to go too deep into that right now.
Yeah. We talked about this in the fear episode. And I'd like to hit it again, we'd like to hit it again, is how trauma affects the brain. The brain has the most brain cells at 7 months gestation. So about 2 months before you're born, you have more brain cells than you're ever going to have. It's all downhill from there. Some of us, it's a little quicker than others. But yeah, we're losing brain cells from that moment on. And our brain actually needs to lose brain cells so that it can prioritize resources. Our brain needs to do that because we have more areas than other animals. Mammals certainly do. We have the frontal cortex. That's where we're able to have impulse control, seeing the big picture, emotion regulation, switching from one task to another, planning, starting a task, ending a task. And then we have the neocortex. That's where all of our rational thought resides. Now, mammals have these parts. Ours is just much better. Reptiles don't have those parts. They just have the lower regions. The reptilian brain is what we call it.
So if you're a reptile listening to this, ignore that part.
All God's creatures, no judgment. Some judgment from me.
Can I add one more thing without going into too much detail? We also need to know that frontal cortex doesn't fully develop until later in life. And that we'll talk about that later. But I was talking to my nephew about why car insurance is expensive until you get to be 25 or 26. And it's because they know about brain development.
Yeah. Car accidents steeply drop off after 25 and 26 because you have better impulse control. Yep. That's when the brain's fully developed, especially the frontal cortex. Yep. Reptiles and people have the reptilian brain. The limbic system has the amygdala, the fear center of the brain. That's in charge of keeping us safe. There's also the diencephalon. It has some more base functions, the automatic parts of the brain that keeps our heart beating, our lungs breathing, all the other automatic stuff that you don't have to think about is there. When we're developing, our brain grows from the inside out. So it grows from the diencephalon. And then on top of that good base, we have the limbic system developing. And then on that good base, we have the neocortex and then the frontal cortex developing. So the more base parts, the older parts of the brain to the newer parts of the brain. When we go through trauma, the earlier we go through trauma, those parts of the brain don't have a good time in life to be able to develop in a healthy, safe way. And so it's kind of like the Leaning Tower of Pisa was built on unsteady ground, and that's what causes the tower to lean. It's not because the tower wasn't built well, it just didn't have a great foundation. That affects the rest of the brain development. So you might not have a great limbic system that had a safe environment to build well, and so you are constantly in fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, like we talked about in the fear episode. And on top of that, you won't be able to have a great neocortex and frontal cortex to develop. You were going to say something, Jen.
I was going to say, I think it's important to recognize that as we say this, that you can retrofit some of these things, though, later through therapy.
And I think, I was going to get to that.
Yeah, I want to make sure that people know that because the tower is still leaning in Italy, if I'm correct, and I want you to know
Yeah,
that
they
you
tried to
don't.
add another level on top to help create. It didn't do anything.
Yeah, but you can heal from that, but it is a reality that it affected the development.
Yeah. And so if you have a therapist trained in neurodevelopmental model of the brain, like we're talking about, that these stages and when we are traumatized affects the development of the brain, and that's why we're showing up a certain way in our life, the therapist will know how to intervene in therapy in a way to help get the brain to develop up to where it needs to be so that you're able to function in life the way that you would like to. Let's say that your limbic system developed in a safe environment, but when your neocortex, the rational part of the brain, is the time of life when you were developing that you were traumatized. And so rational thought maybe isn't your strong suit, or maybe your impulse control is where we're struggling because you were traumatized when that was developing. By the time we're 3 years old, our limbic system is fully developed. And so a three-year-old has just as strong of feelings as an adult does.
So they have just as many feelings, but I'm guessing they have less communication skills. Therefore, it comes out in a much bigger, explosive way.
Yeah, because they're 22, 23 years away from having that impulse control completely developed.
Or even just like 2, 3 years away from having like a full vocabulary to be able to communicate that with anyone.
Yeah, how frustrating would that be to have the strength of feelings that we have, the three adults here on this podcast, but not have the ability to communicate that?
And then everyone just looks at you and is like, you need a nap. And to be fair, I feel like if someone did that to me as an adult, I'd actually be very grateful.
Rachel certainly appreciates it.
Yeah. You need a snack, Haley. Yes, I do.
I think it's interesting that we talk about these things because when people think about trauma, they go way broad, right? And like, I'm sorry, I said that wrong. When people think about trauma, they go very narrow, saying that there's only certain things that are included in trauma. But when we start to take this approach of saying, what really happened to your brain development? Again, it's not a choice made consciously. It's an experience that you had, and a lot of things that happened in your childhood before you were even had a lot of control over your environment and your experiences.
Yeah, capital T trauma and lowercase T trauma. Capital T traumas. When we refer to something that happened to you or happened to someone very close to you. And let's differentiate between happening before you were 18, so your brain is still undergoing a great deal of development, and after 18, when your brain is mostly developed. 83%, like 4 in 5 adults have experienced at least one capital T trauma before they were 18.
It also just depends, honestly. Like whenever I learned about capital T trauma versus lower T trauma, I've never differentiated it necessarily by that. It's kind of been by how the body itself has responded to it. Because some people, I've dealt with some pretty extreme trauma cases, and some people, they don't respond largely to something that someone else would consider a huge thing. And so for them, it's almost like we would see that as a capital T, but for them, honestly, putting it in their perspective, to them, that was kind of a lowercase compared to everything else they had, right?
Yeah. So there's a few things that happen there. One is that there's the number of capital T traumas in their life, mm-hmm. that it becomes a drop in the bucket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The other thing is there are things that become mitigating factors in someone's life when trauma is concerned. There's resiliency, there is purpose in life, and there are numbers of healthy attachment figures become like anchors for a ship in a storm. And then lastly, lowercase t trauma can have the same effect as a capital T trauma if it is consistent and persistent. It becomes chronic stress, and chronic stress has the same effect on the brain as a capital T trauma. It becomes like living in a pressure cooker.
So it's less about being able to classify something as like an overall generalizing of this is capital T, this is lowercase t, and more in comparison of what variables that person has gone through is going to help more.
Yeah. So for example, in the adverse childhood experiences assessment, it's just the 10 most common capital T traumas that children experience in the United States. They are not the only capital T traumas, but they're the most common. And so they're the ones that often therapists will ask people about.
Screen them for.
Yeah, exactly. There is one that is specifically about chronic stress. And it asks if you didn't feel like you were special in your house growing up. You can have a day where you don't feel special, and that might not even register. But if it is consistent and persistent, that lowercase t trauma is chronic stress, which becomes capital T trauma.
And you may notice that we're delving a lot into the background of trauma. That's kind of our intent. is just this idea that we're not necessarily going to give you lists of like, this is traumatic and that's traumatic and so forth. It's more we want to understand like what's going on in the background, what's going on in the processing part when it comes to trauma, and why does it come out as trauma, right? Or at least that person's reaction.
Well, and it's interesting because I have a lot of people who come into therapy and say, I had a great childhood. And I think it's interesting to say you can have a lot of positive experiences in your childhood. We move to using what the ACE or the adverse childhood experiences, because we want to say, okay, you had a great childhood. Did this happen to you? And then I remember the first time I took the ACE, and I think I had a really good childhood. There was nothing that I was like, oh, that was really crazy. But then I realized, oh, well, but things did happen and they did affect me. And it doesn't mean that my parents were bad or that my childhood was bad, but I did have an emotional response. Remember, if we go to that very basic trauma experience, just like now I will have an emotional response to people falling through the ceiling that I didn't have before.
Yeah, I imagine there's going to be a little bit of nervousness that wasn't there before when someone either climbs a ladder or goes into an attic.
Yep. And that's just because I now have an emotional response to it.
I think, though, too, let's see if we'll keep this in. So I think with what you're mentioning, too, is that when it comes to trauma and a trauma response, I hear you saying like a lot of people, and I have a lot of clients, too, like this, where it's like I am reacting. Therefore, I have to have had like a huge issue to react to. But when I look at my history, it's really not that bad. And unfortunately, if you don't understand truly what this trauma mentality is coming from and what it means and what it could entail, you actually start, that's where different movements have come into play in the history of therapy, where they make up things and try to label you with them.
So, oh, in the 90s,
like you see in the 90s,
recovered memory therapy.
Yeah. The recovered memory. Unfortunately, you see that now a lot. I have a lot of life coaches that have unfortunately done some not great things.
You said life coaches. I have to throw salt over my food now.
Some are great, but there are some that actually still specialize in recovering memory. And I've had a lot of clients come to me and say, well, I have these recovered memories, but I don't think there's nothing to prove they happened. And so you see people really trying to understand, why is my body reacting to something that quote unquote isn't traumatic? Therefore, I need to create this history in my past to give myself validation to having a reaction to trauma, when really what needs to happen is, especially with ACEs and things like that, what we're trying to say is it doesn't matter if the world is saying that's a 5 on the scale, therefore it's not a big deal. We're saying any experience, and that's why ACEs is so great, is because they're not all huge extreme experiences. They can be ones that every child has had at least one or two of them, right? It's not a shaming thing to have a couple scores on the ACEs. But what we're saying is that your body is going to react very differently depending on your circumstance, and that's okay. And so you don't need to have these big historical issues that have happened in order to have reason to have a reaction. So I think just being very clear about that, we're going to mention some bigger traumas at times, but that doesn't mean that that's the only trauma that's valid to have a reaction. We also are going to mention some very small traumas, and some of people are going to say, I would never react to that. Great. However, there's a lot of us who have reacted to that because that is the trauma in our background.
The key to why trauma is important and why we need to address it is because it rewires the brain, and it either wires the brain in such a way that we can't access our full brain power in a helpful way, like when we were talking about how the brain develops. So you might think that you're kind of dumb and then you work on your trauma and it turns out you're way smarter than you ever thought. Like when we talked about in the fear episode, for each level of feeling triggered, you lose 10 IQ points up to 50 if you're terrified. For each level of the brain that didn't develop completely, you're hampered about 10 IQ points. So I wasn't a great student in junior high and high school because of the trauma I was going through as a teenager. I addressed the trauma, did some great emotion work, and I got A's all through college and my master's program.
I like what Taylor said, and I want to go back to it. It's not just what happens. It's how people respond to what happens. So we talked about kind of those tent poles and having a healthy attachment. So a big part of trauma is, especially in those early childhood years, is what happened to me, and then how did my caregivers respond to what happened to me? And just so you're aware that those are two different questions that I would ask as a therapist, is not only what happened, but then how did people respond to you who knew about it, or did you feel safe enough to tell other people? So it's important that we recognize, and this ties back to our attachment stuff that we just went through in our last couple recordings, before the drama triangle, and to realize that that matters. It matters how people responded to you.
Mm-hmm. If speaking of the ACE, you can find it online or you can reach out to us and we'd be happy to do it with you or to send you a copy. But if you have four capital T traumas before the age of 18, you're more likely to struggle with weight. You're more likely to have a substance or sexual addiction. You're more likely to miss a lot of work. You're more likely to have diabetes or another chronic illness. You're more likely to have mental health issues. You're more likely to attempt suicide by a lot. You're more likely to have an STD, heart disease, cancer, stroke, COPD, and broken bones. There are a lot of other physical health issues that come along with having capital T traumas in childhood.
And I hope that when people hear that, they can have some compassion for themselves if they're doing that versus blame. Because in saying, you know what, I had to deal with my trauma and survive my trauma somehow. And so I might have experienced some things that weren't healthy for me, and I've got those habits. But I want to emphasize that you can heal and repair from trauma. You can move into those things. So if you look at all those things and say, oh, then it's just hopeless or helpless, I would say that's when you would definitely bring in the therapist to help you say, no, you can have significant healing happen from trauma as well. So that's what it looks like when you're not dealing with trauma, versus when you are dealing with trauma, you can move into a healthier range in most, if not all, of those areas.
Yeah, some of the physical effects might still be a struggle, but they will be lessened as you do good trauma work. So, little self-disclosure, my ACE score is 9. It's scored out of 10. And
he just likes to beat everyone at all these things.
Very competitive. I knew I was going to be talking about this in 2023. So
to make sure I
back in the 80s and 90s, I went out of and so yeah, I had shingles for 4 years, things like that. There's some permanent side effects from that.
Yeah, but there's some chronic stuff that can occur.
I used to miss a lot of work when we all worked together at a place a couple times ago, but not anymore now that we're here. Hi, Haley.
Now that he's a boss.
Well, but now also that you're taking care of yourself better, right? Mm-hmm. And so that comes with, you know, managing your stress better and doing that self-care and again, that healing. So did it take away all the effects of trauma? No, trauma still exists and that's part of your experience, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you can't find ways to heal. I think it was interesting because even when we did our, even this last week when I had a client come to session and talked about our resentment episode and how she recognized how the resentment episode had caused numerous UTIs and other physical effects. I think it can be very empowering to recognize that what you're going through physically is not, is is a compilation of what you've experienced in your life, and it doesn't make you bad. You can address it from a place of, okay, how can I help myself heal? And I'll just leave with one book recommendation of the book, The Body Keeps Score by Bessel van der Kolk, is one that I really enjoy reading. I probably read it 2 or 3 times now, and I'll probably continue to read it every couple of years.
It is a heavy book, but an excellent, excellent book.
Yeah, it is, but it can help validate a lot of that physical stuff that comes along with trauma.
I would recommend listening to it. Often I've heard that that makes it a little easier to go through.
I do listen to it. Maybe that is why it's easier.
Yeah, I think that's why it's a little bit easier.
I think we should just end with reminding people that as we talk about trauma, that you may want to do some self-care after you listen to these episodes, or if you feel on edge or stressed, that would be a really good time to do some mindfulness or meditating, that even talking about trauma can be triggering. And so I think it's really important that you recognize that we might talk about some heavy things and that might bring up some emotional responses. And if you do, please do the self-care.
Breathe in Jesus, breathe out peace.
There you go. I'd also recommend, if you have any questions about where you fit into it, like Taylor said about the ACEs, of reaching out to someone to have it done. I would also say just reaching out to a therapist just to see where do you fit with all of that. And if they're recommending that you were in a devil cult worship situation, I would probably run the other way. But I think just in general, talk to your therapist and just ask what their thoughts are. I've really appreciated when my clients will come to me and say, listen, I heard this. Where am I at on that? And, you know, as a therapist, we know how to talk to you about that. We know how to process with you about that and say like, hey, just by the way, like you do have some PTSD, because PTSD is, you know, with all these things we're talking about, post-traumatic stress disorder can be related to trauma. And we'll go more into detail one day about that. But I think just letting yourself feel safe enough to just approach that topic with someone who can help walk you through that, I think, along with self-care, those are really helpful.
Well, and vice versa, I've had people come to me and say, I think I have PTSD, and if I go over the criteria, I can help them say, you have some extra anxiety because of what you experienced, but it's not full-blown to PTSD, and that doesn't make your trauma less valid. It just means that the resilience that you have has helped you manage the trauma you have, and let's do the work and get you in even a better place.
Thanks for listening. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Please feel free to rate, subscribe, and review. And if you want to find us on social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook at Fate Resilience. We'd love to hear from you.